1, 2, 3.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are live, but not live. We're alive, and hopefully we will be alive after this podcast too. But after some of the things we're going to be talking about today, I'm actually joined here by my good friend, Ryan Schwartz, who is coming on a epic journey. We're a week out, literally a week out from leaving, less than a week if you count the flight time.
Yep.
From going to Peru to do our first Aya retreat, right? So this is the first time that we're diving into the medicine of this way. This is a very intense experience that we are definitely experiencing an enormous amount of, I don't want to say resistance, it's more like we're actually experiencing all the things that we want to be experiencing.
Right.
It's almost like this ceremony has already begun the minute we committed, down in the Sacred Valley of Peru. So I literally forget the name of the Ayahuasca Retreat Center, and maybe we should get it.
I do think
that we should plug it and get it, but just to give you some context, we are going down to Peru. We've got a kind of a band of brothers that are going to be there that we know. This kind of the retreat center is led by a man who I've spoken to named Trinity, and he's a really awesome, beautiful man. There's a couple of other shamans, and he's just kind of holding space and doing a bunch of stuff like that, really well versed in this topic and domain. But we are really diving deep in a 9-day journey that basically goes through what I believe is a tobacco purge. So I don't know exactly what that means, but I believe it's like you drink a ton of water, then you drink a mix of something that like is meant to make you gag and puke. Yep. So that you get used to the feeling of having to purge.
The ego is a really funny thing because like when you hear about it and you read it, you know, that we're going to be doing a tobacco purge, you're like, oh yeah, I get that. I know exactly what that's about, right? And you just kind of move on. Mm. Like it's an afterthought. And then we actually talk about it now and we're like, we have no fucking clue what that means.
Clue.
Yeah. Yeah. El Camino Sagrado is the name of the retreat center.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. The sacred path basically is what it's called.
That's right.
And so the core premise is we're doing a tobacco ceremony or cleanse or I guess purge. Then we're doing three ayahuasca sittings, and then ending with a San Pedro kind of grandfather energy. So I've never done San Pedro. I do have some experience with ayahuasca, but I don't want to focus on that. I would like to talk a little bit about, number one, first thing, this is the first ever time we've actually done a podcast.
Which is really shocking.
It's incredibly shocking.
Yeah.
We've used this equipment before to record other things.
Right.
But this is the first time we've actually done a podcast together in the 5 years that we've known each other.
It makes no sense.
It makes.
But I think we're using the perfect topic to usher us in.
So. That's true. That's true. So how are you feeling, you know, as we're leading up to this kind of journey? I know that there's been a ton of just a whole emotional journey, even getting to a yes on this, and for so many reasons. But, you know, tell us a story. How are you feeling right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think you touched upon it when you said that the journey began the moment we said yes. And there's just a whole cascade of effects, you know, and just realignments that happen around that decision, because it is such a big decision. For me personally, it represents so many things. You know, obviously, I've known about ayahuasca for years now. You know, it's fairly accessible if you really feel the call and seek it, you can get it.
Yeah, you can even get it. Like we could have done it in Montreal.
We could have gone around the block to some dude's shady ass gym and probably done it. Wouldn't have been the same experience.
Yeah, totally.
And it wouldn't have had the tobacco cleanse that we know nothing about. But it's accessible. And the truth is I never really had the calling to work with that medicine. What I did have the calling for was when you presented that invitation and, you know, told me, you know, who would be there and this band of brothers, as you alluded to, including yourself. And to me, that invitation to be with you guys in such a sacred container and experience was a fuck yes on every level, right? And that's what I was responding to. And to me, you guys and that experience that it was wrapped around in the Sacred Valley and just like four or five men that I trust and love so much, that was the Trojan horse to get me to say yes to mm-hmm. the medicine. I probably would not have done it otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of the beauty. Maybe that is how it is reaching out to me in a packaging and container that it kind of knew that I would say yes to.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the first thing I'll touch upon, was that the invitation from who it was coming from and who would be present there, and just everything that that represented was my yes. So that's the first level of it. The next level is, it's really for me, and this is a really special part of it, is that the final ceremony, the third of the three, will actually be taking place on my son's second birthday.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that was just, I mean, first you get through all the cultural bullshit of, you know, the father being absent on their kid's birthday. And maybe some people listening to this are like, I can't believe he's going to be gone on his son's second birthday. Trust me, I had that exact thought, and the guilt and shame, and you run through that in your mind and just realize how culturally embedded that is.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get past that and realize that, you know, yes, you are doing it for your own personal reasons and your own journey and your own healing, but that in turn is of great service to your family, you know. And I've had direct experience with my family, my partner Sue, and my son being directly exposed to my energy that was coming out of my shadows, the shit that just hasn't healed yet, the stuff that I haven't been able to look at, not out of being unwilling to, but you can't see what you can't yet see.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and in many ways that's why it is a gift to them, and they've recognize it as such. You know, at least my partner Sue has been tremendously supportive of that and seeing that. And it's not as a way to kind of like masquerade a selfish journey and say, I'm doing it for my family, when you actually dig into what this work is.
We're also not going to like Vegas. It's not like we're going like off on some journey to find ourselves and then we're going to Vegas. It's like, it's a totally different, like, without a doubt, there is a general benefit to you, but the benefit of you showing up in a better way, in a bigger way, is a benefit to your family and everyone around you. Realistically, it's like, it's a benefit to me.
Of course.
Likewise. Even if you were to go on this journey without me, you know what I mean? Like, it would be a benefit to me as your friend and as your co-conspirator.
Like, when you're so interdependent, you know, and when your energies are so intertwined in what you're doing, whether that's raising a child or building a business, that effect is, you know, truly felt. So, so that's a really meaningful aspect for me. And of course, just kind of like wrapping up this 2 year, what I call initiation of fatherhood. And it really has been that, because the second he was born, it's not like a linear micro step away from your current reality. Your world gets shook up in this cosmic snow globe, and it's just been resettling and violently crashing against each other for 2 years now for both myself and my partner. And this is really a way to acknowledge that, honor that, and close that, and just kind of come back and return back into this harmonious state of celebration and being like, we fucking did that. We entered this thing. We faced our shit as courageously as we could. We made it through.
We haven't done it yet.
Yeah. Thanks for the reminder. I mean, we have by the time we're re-listening.
That's true. By the time I'm ever listening to this again, we have definitely done
a
it.
A message for future us. So that's really kind of a quick summary of what's inspired this journey for me, and what I'm most excited is the wrong word, just most kind of humbled and feeling called to experience, you know, with you guys on this journey.
I feel very, I feel very privileged from the perspective of, number one, I have the opportunity to go. So you're staying for roughly 10 days or 11 days, let's say, wherever you're there. I'm actually staying for 3 weeks. So I'm going to Machu Picchu right after, or I'm going to like whatever, because we're 30 minutes away. But then I'm going to like, I'm just like going to have so much integration time as well. I don't have to come back to the default world or default life that I that I have immediately. And I feel very privileged to have that opportunity to do that, and also to do that with people who I know are willing to do the work, are willing to go that deep. I mean, they're proving it just by showing up.
Right.
But I think they're the type of people that we've gone deep with before. Mm-hmm. And that's what's good, like in other ways. So it's just, it feels like such a great opportunity to do this. And I know from my perspective that we were talking about like with Quantum Kings and some of the things you're doing and you're bringing to the table. And I know that I won't spoil anything. I won't go too deep into it, but long story short, we are talking about, you know, and Ryan has been speaking about for some time now, building a men's group.
Right.
And so we're going with some badass men, like men that I would love to consider as a part of a circle or an inner circle that I get to consult and get to consult me. Mm-hmm. And so that whole piece of that, adding in even like Greg, somebody who I've worked with for years on web development, and I know is a total workaholic, and so are you, and so am I. Mm-hmm. All of, like, I think we have, many of us have very similar challenges.
Right.
And we have like the most opportune, the stars couldn't align better. Mm-hmm. Meaning it's there's almost no cost to me. Mm-hmm. I've got like credit card points that paid my flight. Mm-hmm. I was able to work out a deal where I don't have to pay cash, and I'm changing the value that I could bring to the table.
Right.
And that's just working out all beautifully. And it's also coinciding with you being even able to come on this, like, potentially able to come on this trip. Meaning you now have a nanny who's helping take care of, you know, and there's been a conspiracy being going on in Ryan's life called Nannygate.
Nannygate.
Yeah. Which has been the cycle of, this is now nanny number five.
Number five,
yeah. Who has been involved in a childcare journey that Ryan's been going through.
Mm-hmm.
So it just like all of those stars aligned.
Yeah, to even have the opportunity to do that, right? Like, we're literally going, I think, 2 weeks after we finally have that childcare that makes it even possible.
Yeah.
You know? So, yeah, I mean.
And we're also going, and I want to shout out Cody specifically, because one of the core things that Ryan and I have had a conversation about for some time is that there's this one guy who was at this retreat called New Kings.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's kind of where many of us in this band of brothers actually met. And
Phil Drillet's group.
Yeah, Phil Drillet's, event. And Phil is a person who's been my coach for a long time now. And he was the one who personally invited me to this event and this timing. And so I said yes, like, a long time ago. Mm-hmm. But I was like even more of a yes. It was kind of because it became our mission to enroll you.
Right.
It became like literally like, well, okay, we're getting Ryan. Mm-hmm. What are the conditions we need to create to make that happen?
Yeah.
And
we were sitting in a sauna trying to figure that out, I think, too.
Him and I had a powwow on it and then figured it out. And then we decided that we would invite you to Strom Spa, which is obviously, a soft spot. And you're my relationship.
The most expansive container for making decisions.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Yeah. You don't contract into smallness while at a beautiful spa.
Exactly. So, yeah. It was the right. I mean, and it wasn't like we weren't here to sell you. I think we were. At the end of the day, I approached it to you even prior to that that moment with, hey, I feel like you suffer from many of the similar pains that I suffer from.
Mm-hmm.
And what I mean by that is much of my pain is self-caused.
Sure.
And I think
everyone's suffering is self-inflicted.
In some ways. But I think other people have more circumstantial challenges and different things. Realistically, so do you, so do I, but not... Like, my circumstances are pretty fucking awesome. Right. Look around. I'm speaking to a multi-$100 sound system right now. Mm-hmm. Many thousands of dollars have been spent, and I have the opportunity to go out and do these things. Okay. Yeah. So I know that I have this position of privilege, and I get to go and participate. But one of the things that you and I had spoken about 1,000 times over was, I want to be a part of a men's group. I want to go to an event where we go out into the wilderness of Alaska, kind of what Cody does on a regular basis.
I love
basis.
How we've been dreaming this up with Cody without Cody even recognizing
He has
it.
No idea. He has no idea. Going to see this podcast.
We've made so many plans for Cody Crockett that he has
knows
no fucking clue.
Nothing about. He knows absolutely nothing about, because he's kind of our version of Bear Grylls in our life.
Pretty much,
and he lives in Alaska, and he's constantly on the top of mountains hiking. He's incredibly fit. He's incredibly... just a charismatic, fun-loving dude.
And an amazing human.
Exactly. Just he's just a total badass on all fronts.
On all levels,
and he just doesn't know it.
Yeah.
I don't think he knows. Well, I think he knows it to some degree, but I don't think he knows it nearly as much as you and I credit him for.
Of course.
And so, but the whole time, when we were talking about the conversation with Quantum Kings, the entire time we were talking about, but what's that event look like in comparison or in relationship to... How are we going out and living like in the wilderness with nothing? We're walking out with a little bit of food, a camping gear, and our hiking boots, and we're just going. And I don't even own hiking boots. Right. We had a whole conversation about our boots today, but how do we make that happen? Mm-hmm. And now, boom, Cody's coming. We're actually going and basically doing that. Yeah. Like, we're going on a super long trek all the way down to Peru, going into the Sacred Valley, which is kind of... generally, it feels like where the desert meets the where the rainforest kind of thing, right? The forest.
Yeah.
And it's right, you know, next to the kind of the sacred sites of the Incans.
Right.
And these beautiful, beautiful, beautiful scenery, this beautiful, you know, lodge and this beautiful space. And we're going with this cast of characters.
Mm-hmm.
So that whole way it played out is just wild. And I've had multiple attempts or opportunities to kind of go and sit in ceremony a few times. And I was all invited by Samantha in Austin, Texas. I was invited to go in Costa Rica, you know, and it never like worked out. Like for whatever reason, it just wasn't the time, or I didn't want to, I didn't feel right. And this time I was like, no, this is
a clear yes. Yeah.
This is the moment. So how, when we invited you, right? You're not like, I'm more versed in psychedelics, therefore I'm more versed in like let's say the altered state of consciousness as it comes to a more drug level, let's say drug. I use that. I'll call it a medicine, but it's, you know,
drug induced.
Magic mushrooms or LSD or whatever. These are things that for me have very much healed me and helped me. But ayahuasca is a whole other beast. And I don't think you knew realistically, like you've heard of it, but I don't think you know exactly what you're in for. And that's kind of the interesting thing from my perspective.
Yeah.
Cause it's like, even I'm a little nervous. I'm not nervous about my life.
Right.
I'm not nervous about like being in danger. But I am somewhat nervous. And I say this from the perspective of like, I don't know what shit's going to come up. I don't know what I don't know.
Yeah.
And how is that going to feel? And what is that going to bring out? And part of me, and I think the ironic piece of like the journey began when we said yes, is we do know some things. And it had to force us to address those different pieces.
Right.
Immediately.
Yeah.
And so how are you processing that? Like, what was that experience like for you? Because this is not your cup of tea.
That's interesting, right? Like, the second the invitation got presented, it was a very clear yes without even really thinking about the medicine, just the energy behind the invitation. And, you know, it was a clear yes, it was aligned. The greatest fear and resistance and hesitation had nothing to do with the medicine and everything to do with, like, is Sue going to be okay watching, you know, our son for 2 weeks without me? You know, that, which is like, must be crazy to hear on the other side of the microphone that is like all of a sudden the bigger consideration and fear than actually taking this super powerful medicine and facing shit that's been buried for, you know, ever.
That's true. But you've also, over the last 2 years, like, I think in the last 2 years, I saw you past 7 p.m. Like two or three times. And in general, I didn't, you know, daddy daycare time started around 2:30 or whatever.
So I was so kind of like locked into that routine and so committed to making that work. And I think my hyper commitment to being, you know, all in as a father was almost kind of, the only way I knew how to respond to what I'll call adversity. You know, we didn't plan for the pregnancy. And I think there's something beautiful about that, because like any challenge that hits you unexpectedly, you tend to just go all in and be like, I'm going to figure this shit out. You know, I'm going to go all in and have a single focus on just making this work. And that was my response to fatherhood. I didn't plan for fatherhood. It was something in the like far out, maybe when I'm in my mid 40s and semi-retired kind of like consciousness. And then it hits you and all of a sudden you recalibrate around that. And my recalibration was probably to an extreme compared to most other fathers. You're right. I was at home by 5 o'clock every day. You know, we've been through five nannies, as you alluded to. So we've maybe had consistent childcare for maybe 2 months out of 12 months. And that whole other time I was like,
2 months out of 24 months.
Two months out of 24. And beyond that, like I stepped in, I was ending my work days at 1 o'clock all summer.
And you work from home, like just and so that, well, home and here.
Yeah.
This is like the office for both of us.
So,
but this is realistically, that is a, it's a very challenging to work from home and then try and not be in dad mode or in, sometimes you just want to sleep mode, like need a break mode. And so you already have that challenge of like your bed is on the, in the other room. Now you have the other challenge of a distraction that can happen at any moment.
Totally. So because I was so kind of locked into that, stepping out of that and trusting that both Sue and Bright would be okay without my presence for 2 weeks was scarier than the medicine itself, as weird as that sounds. And I'll probably re-listen to this in like a few years and be like, dude, you were insane. Like, yeah. They'll be okay. Yeah. You're taking this super potent medicine. But aside from that, as I've really kind of like gotten closer to this date with, you know, Aya, I've really come to realize that, like, you don't see what you don't see, but it's what I don't see that I'm most afraid of. I'm not afraid of what I will see. I'm afraid what I can't see right now that's operating and expressing through me, right? Mm-hmm. That's far scarier. It's far scarier to continue having these old patterns influencing my relationships and, you know, in very subtle ways, you know, causing abuse and harm to people I love without me even seeing it because I can't see it. So that is far scarier to me than having a few powerful sits and just seeing and releasing as much of it as I can. Like, mm-hmm. that I actually look forward to. Mm-hmm. Like, there's almost a lustfulness for that sit, you know, and what it represents and what it means to finally kind of come face to face with a lot of the things that have been operating behind the scenes for me. Yep. We got company. Yep.
And just my brother. Mm-hmm. My brother walked in. We're he's coming to do a little podcast right after, but I mean, I think that the challenge that comes with the yes on this kind of deep dive into your subconscious, basically, is that you don't know how it's going to change the course of your life.
Right.
So for me, I actually am like, my fear is less around like what I don't know or what's going to come up. Mm-hmm. I think part of my fear is like what it's going to undeniably not force me, but like activate me and call me forward to be.
Mm-hmm.
And part of me is like dying. Like I've been ready for that forever.
Yeah.
But there's another part of me that's like, oh shit, I haven't been ready for this. Like maybe I'm not ready.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm not enough. Maybe I'm not like some other thing. Now, part of that is those are the shadows I do know in some way, shape, or form.
Mm-hmm.
But I also, it implicates other people or other things. Like maybe everything I'm doing is like, maybe I should just drop everything and go do that other thing.
Yeah.
Because there's a part of me that maybe wants to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So and it's kind of crazy that we give to me, what's I find very interesting is how much power I am giving it over the direction of my life.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yep. Like I'm like giving that thing, but here's for me where this goes so deep is I don't sit still.
Mm-hmm.
So to even just for 9 days
to
disconnect from my phone, my email, my inbox, all the things. And then is a lot with no connection. That's a long time for me. Mm-hmm. I will probably write. I'll probably use technology in some way, but not not as a tool to connect to my work.
Right.
Okay. And then to lay down on a mat for hours and just like be in like Shavasana basically or in child's pose or whatever version of those of the whatever pose I'm going to need to get through the process.
Yeah.
To just be in that space, like in that stillness for that long. Feels really, really, really challenging in and of itself. For no medicine, no nothing. If I had to do that just sober, I think it would actually be more challenging for me sober.
That sounds like my dream weekend.
Which is amazing. Because, for me, like I think the nightmare scenario is that, you know, like some people love to go to these Vipassanas or whatever, these 10-day
silent retreats.
10-day silent retreats. You can't look at somebody. You can't talk to anybody. You can't write. You can't read. Mm-hmm. You can't do any of these things. Like it's just you and your mind.
It's how the Joker became the Joker.
I mean, I think it's just self-mutiny. Like it sounds absolutely painful and horrible and it doesn't sound like anything I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
But ayahuasca has that kind of like, power in my mind anyway that it can be a full life changer but that has consequence on many of the people and relationships and agreements that I have with people today
it could
and so I think I've experienced a lot of guilt in general in my career from kind of always feeling like I have to take care of something else like I feel like a dad all the time. I don't have a kid but I do feel like I've got a similar challenge in me in that way
right
So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I totally get that. And I think that's one of the qualities that I really appreciate about you is how empathetic you are towards everyone and making sure that their well-being is taken care of, especially on a career front. I've noticed that. And mm-hmm. you really want to make sure that the people in your circle are doing what they love and getting paid for it. And I mean, that's really your ethos in your business too, right?
And launching the course and doing the thing, yeah.
And I think what a lot of people don't realize about you is how much you live that in your personal relationships and those in your close circle, you know, beyond an online course, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. No, it's 100. Yeah. The course is just a way of supporting other people exactly. because I feel, not a guilt, but I feel a responsibility to go and do that thing.
Yeah.
So, but it really is because that's the energy that I embody on a day-to-day basis.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the truth is, the way I see it at least, or at least my truth of it, is that people are implicated by who you are anyway. They're implicated by how you are acting and the decisions you're making right now from this place of consciousness, right? And
yeah,
so that
they're implicated in a way that if I can break through to another level, realistically, I would be serving them further in some way, shape, or form anyway.
That's the intention, right?
Yeah.
You know, my family is undoubtedly going to be implicated in how I show up when I return, right? And regardless how that integration looks. Yeah. They are deeply, deeply implicated. A son who is soaking up energy and ideas and conditioning, and there's no avoiding that, right? Mm-hmm. He's going to be implicated regardless of what I do tomorrow. Whether I, you know, sit in a metro and absorb that energy or go sit and face whatever I can face and come back as, you know, powerfully and authentically and compassionately and heart openly. That's not even a word. But as I can. And, you know, and it's not to say that we always hit those intentions, you know, as well as it could be hit, but that's what I'm leading with. You know, they're going to be implicated regardless of what I choose to do. And the best you could do is make the decision that you feel is of the highest service to yourself. And by extension, those who are, you know, those whose realities are influenced by your own. And also acknowledging that everyone has free will to be exposed to you to whatever degree is appropriate and aligned for them, unless it's a child who's two.
Do you have specific intention for this ceremony? Is there like a specific thing that if you could walk away from, not only on like the positive side, but also like some, if you can gain something and you can lose something, what would you say?
If I could gain something and if I could lose something, I guess they go hand in hand. I feel like I intend to lose something so I can gain something, if that makes sense.
That's why I think I asked that question in that way, because I believe that, I guess my core belief within that is that for me to create the space that I need to have the breakthrough, I have to kind of rid certain things. That's why why I'm appealed by ayahuasca, because there is a purge. It's like I have to lose something to create space for me to gain the other, more of something else.
Sure.
It's almost like there's an energetic, there's a not a maximum. It's not that I'm limited, but it's there's only so much I can pay attention to, or I can, you know, address in any one moment.
Yeah. So I think like, if we were to get like really quiet right now and just kind of tune into our default state, you know, like what is the hum of your body and mind right now? You know, and I had a very erratic, aggressive hum that was just kind of playing in the background. This, I don't come off necessarily as an anxious person, but there was this agitated, arms, like up in arms, guardedness, anxiety, nervousness, stress response. I was just like at this slow hum as my kind of like default state, right? Yeah. And a few weeks ago, I finally noticed that. And it wasn't through, you know, meditation. Oddly enough, it was just really through having a conversation with Sue. And then all of a sudden kind of getting kind of a meta perspective of the conversation that was happening. And I just stopped mid-sentence and froze. And I'm like, you asshole. Like, I finally zoomed out and saw these subtle ways that aren't abusive on the surface at all. But when you say certain things totally subconsciously, totally unconsciously to elicit a hurt or a feeling of guilt or remorse in the other person, that's flat out fucking abusive, you know? And I would never consider myself to be an abusive person. And then I saw in that conversation how that pattern was playing out, and I literally froze, and then I fucking shattered. I'm like, I've been doing this my whole life with Sue, with my parents, with some friends, right? Like saying things that on the surface are pretty benign, but you recognize that the intent behind it is to elicit some form of negative emotion, mm-hmm. right? And I'm like, how did I go 34 years without seeing that? You know, and that both terrified me and also excited me to see that there are these layers that are operating, right? And that they can be cracked, because that one was cracked in that instant. And that was a breakthrough experience that has really kind of lasted and shifted, you know, everything in my relationships. So when we talk about what my intentions are for this ceremony is, you know, humbly acknowledging that there is another layer to that. There are probably multiple layers to that that I've just yet to be sensitized to. And they're going to be really ugly and hard to admit once I see them. But yet so liberating in, and how relationships can evolve in a much healthier, loving way on the other side of it. So what will be lost is really just kind of this layer, which is really a conglomeration of fears, of unworthiness, of anger, of rage even, right? Of spite, of resentment, this conglomeration of energies. If I could shatter that layer and return just so much more willing to offer my love, not weaponize it, but offer it as a gift, not restrict it or withhold it when I'm angry and reduce it to this currency that I could withdraw from you at any fucking time. If I can return and actually flow from my heart, mm-hmm. that's what I would gain from it.
A move from a different place.
Totally. Yeah.
Be moved and move from a different place.
Yep.
Exactly. Yeah. I think that's generally, like, I think that sums up, and I don't know that I can add any more eloquent words than you do. I think the general trend of what you and I share in common, mm-hmm. you know, I think we get along on many levels mm-hmm. from a professional standpoint, from mm-hmm. the way we view the world in some ways, or the kind of the expression that we experience and other things. Yeah. And then, you know, what we're dedicated to in those ways. And I think we resonate in many ways, mm-hmm. but I think the thing that underlies both of us is that we, in many scenarios, our passion is fueled through our anger.
Yep.
And our anxiety.
Yeah.
And so if there's an anxiety that you experience, that moves the needle that says, I need to do this thing. Mm-hmm. Right. And it's like, so it's not like I'm going to be a great father from this perspective. It's like, right. I'm going to be a great father because I'm going to hustle harder and I'm going to mm-hmm. make sure they have all the things and blah, mm-hmm. blah. Like, it's like you're moving many times from a place that, from my perspective, feels like it's more, it's got like a 51-49 negative
yeah.
spin mm-hmm. versus the 51-49 positive spin. And I would say that in my case, this is very true. And I would possibly go further. Mm-hmm. I think I'm closer to like a 70-30 sometimes.
And we hate seeing ourselves that way. That's the yeah. thing. It's like, you know.
But then I'm fueled by that. I'm fueled by the hate of the thing, mm-hmm. not the love for the other thing. Mm-hmm. That's like even in that expression, mm-hmm. that it's like, I hate seeing myself that way, so I need to be better. Mm-hmm. And that subtle,
yeah.
nuanced way of saying something mm-hmm. is at the end of the day, part of my overall macro and micro experience yep. that I don't know another way to short circuit that right. other than years of therapy mm-hmm. potentially mm-hmm. or three shots, mm-hmm. possibly a second cup on a couple of things. But you know, a 9-day journey yep. seems, I'm not expecting, you know, whatever to fix me. Mm-hmm. I'm expecting to see where the challenges are, where the neural, mm-hmm. it's like my ideal scenario would be to see where the neurological pathways mm-hmm. are hitting the resistance or wired mm-hmm. to have those responses mm-hmm. and then allow myself to come back and rewire them. Yeah. So I'm not saying I hope that this solves my issues.
Right.
I'm saying I hope it gives me insight as to where I can go and rewire.
Yeah.
So that I know where the short circuit is.
Yeah.
Around that thing and create that shortcut for so that I don't have to like unwire or deconstruct my entire brain to figure out where the fuck I can recalibrate.
Yeah, you know, that's all we can really kind of pray for is that moment of insight. Right. When I had that cracking open with Sue a few weeks ago, that was a moment of insight. It was kind of this interruption. It short circuited. I had a break and realized that I've been running this pattern unconsciously for as long as I can remember and how hurtful and damaging that pattern is for others. Right. Mm-hmm. And in that moment of insight, you can't feel anything but remorse and liberation simultaneously,
yes,
which is a really interesting cocktail. Mm-hmm. Like you almost can't embody and integrate that cocktail of remorse and liberation simultaneously. And my response was literally to just weep. Like I cracked open, you know, cry the kind of tears I've never cried before in any kind of grief setting, which was really that. It was the tears of remorse of like, I'm so fucking sorry that I've been doing this. You know, it wasn't guilt. It was just total remorse that I've put people through pain through those, you know, networks and those patterns and those, you know, those expressions that were coming from that place. And then there was liberation and celebration that I don't need to do that anymore. Right.
And where do you think that, do you think that if you weren't going on this Aya journey, you would have had that same breakthrough? Like, would that conversation have happened anyway day without any of this? Like,
maybe it's so hard to say. I think like I think when there are moments of intensity that are lived with a certain of awareness, you provide the environment for breakthrough or epiphany to take place, period. And I think sitting in ceremony is just doing that in a very intentional and conscious way with, of course, some aids that help you see those things. I'm not an expert on the
medicine.
And
the aids aren't just the plants. I think it's like the entire experience. Like,
of course.
There's people who are, there's like... like ancient tribal chants, there's all the, there's a many, many layers to the experience that aren't just the ceremony. I think it's everything that goes with that. I mean, I think even like the purging in and of itself is a fucking like, okay.
Yeah.
You know, it's a spiritual experience. It's a spiritual journey. It's spiritual tourism in a sense.
Yep. And truthfully, I do feel like the stakes for many of us are getting too high to take the long route, you know, towards these things. You mentioned like years of therapy to have the same kinds of breakthroughs. You know, it's not necessarily about taking the speed pass. It's taking about the effective route to limit the hurts we're causing and create the positive impact we want to create.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And, and if I take 10 years to solve that challenge, then I have 10 potential more years of more misery.
Mm-hmm.
Not to say that my life is miserable.
Right.
Only to say that I might have more misery than I need to.
Yeah, exactly.
I might have more pain than I need to.
Mm-hmm.
So if I can avoid the pain, but more importantly, create pleasure, find that joy again, and remove my, like, for me, the other things that come up are like, a lot of my self-worth is in my ability to be effective.
Right.
I experience that. Some version of that, right? Mm-hmm. So effective could mean how am I performing in a something category of any kind, any category of any way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
Where, so it's tying my worth to performance.
Right.
And that performance can be as a, in the many characters of expression, which you speak a lot about, right? Like, because you don't just have an expression as a, as a father, you have expression. As a son, you have expression. As a man, you have expression. As a blah, 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 right? See, all these expressions.
Yeah.
I have almost like blinded or numbed. It's like, you have the five burner theory, right? You've got these burners and you've got these different buckets of life. Well, I've had one bucket like on full blast, like full, like literally the building's on fire in certain scenarios because I've just been cranking up that heat, just brewing the most wicked of stews and soups of all time.
Yeah.
I've been playing such a long game.
Yeah.
In my career.
Yeah.
And everything is incredibly calculated.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that my life doesn't have some level of spontaneity or some magic that comes up, but it's, there's definitely less of it than if I were to be more open to a different reality, a different opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel some level of opportunity to release that and go again back from or move from a place of like, I get to experience this, not I have to do this.
Yeah.
Right. I get to have this fun versus I need to create X result.
Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So it's being from, it's moving from like a more macro way of saying it is like, the doing, building, creating.
Yep.
To the being, feeling, experiencing.
Yeah. And it does require that deep dive to see what's at play there. That's the thing is like, it's very easy to kind of like, you know, I call it quote card consciousness, just like read a meme, you know, and say, oh shit, my value is innate. It's not tied. I could divorce it to my business. Right. Yeah. My significance is here. I am love, period. Oh, I get it. Right. Yeah. I don't need to do the work. Right. And if, and it's very, it's very seductive to believe that. Right. Yeah. But the truth is that what's producing that dynamic in you or me, you know, feeling like, you know, my value and significance is based on, you know, a certain thing, you know, call it the success of my business, you know, for lack of a better word.
Sure.
You know, the dynamics at play there are much, much more complex than that. Yeah. You know, it's a conglomeration of, you know, conditionings from different peer groups, you know, from different media, from, you know, that thing your father said when you were 12, you know, to just a lot of your own unworthiness at the same time. There are so many trapped emotions at play, energetic dynamics at play. And like, that's why it really does, in my view, take that intense deep dive to really unwind and uncoil all those things simultaneously. Cause it's not necessarily just one thing that you need to like snap out.
No, there it's a Pandora's box of it's a cocktail of things that might be changing the way that I'm experiencing life.
Exactly.
Part of me is also excited. Well, I've been going through a cleanse and been not eating pork and slowly, essentially doing an elimination diet.
Which
around
is a big
a
deal for an Italian. We have
it's
to say
that. It's a massive deal for me.
Yeah.
It's a it's massive.
Yeah.
I eat pork somehow in everything. Yeah. It's not that I have like, you know, pulled pork all the time, but it's like, I have salami and then I have this, then I have a soup that's like a ramen soup that is pork based broth or, you know what I mean? Like, so there's some level of this that is in that. And pork is far from the only thing. I haven't had coffee in over a week. I haven't had, you know, I haven't had sugar at all. Like there's been some sugar in maybe like a sauce or two in some of the foods that I eat. Like, you know, I know that there's sugar in sriracha, for example, and I went to sushi the other day, or, you know, for Chinese food the other day.
Yeah.
But the, but I've been like moving more and more into kind of a healthier lifestyle in many different ways. And I'm kind of noticing my patterns, like, okay, how much screen time do I have? How much of this, you know, so I'm, it's bringing me into a state of like noticing all the different layers that I have to now start peeling away. I don't, let me rephrase that. I get to now start peeling away.
Yeah.
So the ideas of, you know, and this is one, Samantha's going to love this one in terms of, you know, she's been talking about, my use of the word should, right? And it's like, it's again, and it's another subtlety around the way that I approach everything is this like essentially some form of, cause I want to move away from the idea that I think I've done a lot to move from less of anger, but I definitely, and I've started to really chip away over the last 12 months roughly on anxiety, but then this, I think the ones that are still there and those things are still lingering, but they're definitely less powerful, that, that, that parasite or that cancer of the mind is, has shrunk drastically. But the thing that does feel still very relevant is around guilt or shame. And some level of, overarching responsibility, like way too much, like too much, just too much. And I'm like very sick on a macro level of the world from the perspective that everything feels like it's just accelerating and everything feels like it's more.
Yeah.
The word more is just so painful for me.
Yeah.
I don't know that I want more of anything right now, but that's, maybe I can find a way to like get back to a place where maybe more love, more friendship, more kindness would be exciting to me.
Yeah.
But right now, more of anything feels like it starts. It's where some level of pattern probably I've been able to get to the where the wires are crossed, let's say, and by my definition of cross, but like where there is challenge in the wires or there's messiness in the wires is to the word more. But now I don't know how to fully round the corner on that emotion and that feeling that comes with that, because the spiral of more creates overwhelm, which creates anxiety, which creates, you know, some level of fear. It's less fear for me, but it's like shame, guilt. Then it creates this, then it creates that. Then it leads me to paralyzation eventually. Paralyzation for me is put on YouTube, enter a state of comatose. Eat so much that I have to pass out.
Right.
Like, you know what I mean? Like do things that dull me, basically, that are downers without the downer.
Yeah.
I don't, I'm not an alcohol kind of guy. I'm not, I don't actually naturally like downers, but I do like uppers. And so with the up that comes with like a caffeine boost, I'm, my nervous system is whack.
Right.
Is like constantly redlining, constantly pushing it as far as I can. It's like, oh, I somehow got more work done today. It doesn't mean that I like stop working. It just means I have more room to do more work.
Yeah.
And that layer of that translates to the relationships and the way people even treat me.
Right.
So people don't invite me anywhere. And I think I told you this, and there's like a, I have like a small pain around it, because I actually, I'm happy that they don't sometimes.
Yeah.
But that's, I think, part of my smaller self. Somewhat, but my nobody invites me anywhere, because realistically I've trained them to.
Right.
I'm trained them not to.
Yeah.
Better said.
Yeah.
Because even my brother, at one point he came back and he was gone for many, many years, but he comes back here and there. But the persona that he has of me is, oh, well, you're always busy. Right. Which is true.
Yeah.
It's a true statement. It's a very true,
normal. I was the dude working on weekends, and eventually people just learn to stop inviting you, you know?
And I'm always the guy working on weekends, because even when I go to the farm, it's, I'm there to move that project forward. I have these projects and I move them forward. So everything that I'm doing is work. And even when I'm recovering, it's so that I can work more. It's like, okay, maybe I'll chill on a Sunday. And it's like, I'm giving myself this permission. I'm like, I'm always in this place of giving myself
permission. But the permission never feels fully permissive.
Never.
Exactly.
It's always just back to a form of level of guilt or whatever. And I think that many of us experience this all the time. Some people experience it with their diets. Oh my God, I give myself permission to eat the cake, and then they eat the cake and then they feel guilty. Some people, like, I think we all experience this somewhere. And I think the core idea of why we experience it is because we are generally addicts.
Yeah.
I believe that the word addiction and our addiction as a human race is a bigger topic than we let it be.
Of course, yeah.
Right? Because when we think addict, we think alcohol.
Those
we
are
think
the
drugs. Yep. We think gambling.
The typically stigmatized.
The ones that are like shunned.
Right.
Even though everyone's doing them.
Exactly.
Then there's the next layers like sex.
Yeah.
But I would add now internet addiction, consumption, social media. Validation, likes, like how much validation am I addicted to, all of these things. Now I've moved, I'm not in that category either. I'm even in a more subtle category. I'm definitely in the internet addiction or screen time addiction side of things, but not the social validation. Or I have more of the addiction around the impact that it gets to have. So it's like, I don't care how many likes I get. I have cared about whether or not this is like catalyzing a wave or movement.
Yeah.
So it's not about like, I need the likes.
Right.
I don't care if people like me or don't. It's more around like, is it having the scale of impact? It's a scale thing. It's a legacy thing. But that's a third tier of addiction. Not to say that one is better or worse or tougher, but I think it's more subtle.
It's more subtle, but it's, I mean, I don't want to create comparisons between addictions, but it's certainly a strong one.
It's at a higher level of Maslow's hierarchy of needs. It's not like a, it's not a baseline addiction around, like, I think though, if I had to say where my lowest addiction would be is some level of food. Like some foods. Not really a sugar guy, but I'm definitely a fat, like certain types of foods, fat, salty, salty and fattier foods in some ways. Okay. Yeah. But but it is a higher tiered, like it's at a different scale of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, which is in and of itself is a weird, like, it's a privilege in and of itself.
Sure. I mean, I'll define addiction in a bit of a different way. I'll just define it as, you know, a repetitive pattern that you're displaying that is hurtful and damaging to yourself and those around you, you know, for lack of a better word. And at that point, it doesn't matter how noble I believe my cause for the addiction is or isn't. The fact that it's having a negative influence and impact on those around me is really kind of where I feel, you know, remorseful for that action. And I'll bring it to a story from a few weeks ago. I won't, you know,
and I just want to add to that, to that definition. It's also one that you somehow rationalize is actually serving you.
Yep. Exactly.
I'll add that piece.
Yeah.
I'll also add that it's generally leads to some level of self-destruction.
Yep. Self-destruction, self-abuse on some level.
It's a self-abuse.
Exactly.
So it's not just that you're doing this thing to other people.
Right.
You're actually, it is actually self
Of course. Destructive. Like repeating the idea all the time that like you're not valuable and you're not enough on any level unless this happens or until this happens. That is
more the until for me.
You know, and I feel that, I felt that constantly, right?
And can then you remember a time where you didn't?
I can't. That's the thing. That's been part of my default, right? For as long as I can remember.
That's the hum that's been there forever.
That has been the hum. And then I had that breakthrough moment where I released a layer of it. It's still there and it's still something to be worked on. But at the same time as I had that cracking open, I actually had coffee with, you know, a good friend of mine. He remains a good friend. We went through the past year and a half have been really difficult because he was battling addiction. You know, I won't name his name, but I will be descriptive in what he was going through. He was going through a cocaine and a gambling addiction. And this was a brother. He was one of the most, you know, loving, ambitious, caring dudes ever. I actually had so much respect and admiration for who he was as a 20-year-old, you know, when I met him. Then he went through this period of addiction for 2 years where our relationship really degraded from, you know, what it was to one where he was blatantly lying to me and borrowing money and making lies and excuses for that. And that's really kind of what our relationship has been for 2 years, you know, and it's painful being lied to when you know you're being lied to, but yet still caring about the person on some level and not knowing to what degree you can call someone out without them, essentially, causing more self-harm out of their guilt. I didn't want to guilt him for what he was experiencing because I have no idea what the fuck the experience of being a cocaine addict and a gambling addict is, but I can imagine it being one where you have really high regard for who you are. And the last thing you want to do is continue to assassinate a character that's probably on its last breath already.
Ironically, it's, I believe that on the cocaine front, it's actually it's the journey between those two poles. Is that when you're actually on it, you're like, I'm the best. Like some level of that.
And then the self-hatred after.
And when you're off it, it's the self-hatred.
Exactly.
So it's the elimination. Ironically, the use of certain drugs is the elimination of that destructive pattern in the shortcut way.
Yeah.
That is the shortcut way that creates what we eventually end up seeing as massively deep, dark addiction. And that's where we demonize it because it's very obvious that it's destructive.
Exactly.
But it's subtle destructive.
Because it's obvious. And that's the thing.
Because it's obvious. And it's obvious to anyone looking into the situation. But in my case, I think a lot of people actually champion me for my addiction.
That's the fucked up part.
And that's the fucking weird part. Is that I am championed many times for my capacity. Now, not by all and not all the time. And where that breaks down generally, my type of addiction, your type of addiction, is in our relationships.
Yeah.
It only angers us that they don't hold themselves to that same standard. And therefore, or it angers us that they don't hold me to that standard.
Right.
So, oh, are you making me better? Or, and then it becomes transactional. Is what I can get out of you, extract from you, useful to my addiction? Or, and so we are cancerous.
Yep.
And I believe that society in general is experiencing this cancer.
Yep.
Now, I think we're experiencing on an individual level, which leads to us experiencing it as a complete economy level, mm-hmm. which leads to the entire planet is mm-hmm. being pillaged and burned mm-hmm. for
yeah.
our addiction.
Yeah.
And our addiction are more subtle than our thoughts around like what we're doing on a particular weekend.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, how many times are we going to hit that yellow Amazon button?
Right.
How many times are we going to hit the eject button and just go into a deep trance mm-hmm. on Netflix?
Mm-hmm.
How many times are we just going to
mm-hmm.
fill ourselves with caffeine just because we're not dealing with the fact we're too tired?
Yeah.
How many times are we going to eat like, you know what I mean? How many times are mm-hmm. we going to create the pattern over and over and over mm-hmm. and over again before we realize that our fractal, mm-hmm. where the pattern is beginning,
mm-hmm.
is kind of has some level of a flaw.
Yeah.
And the flaw is not because I do not accept myself.
Mm-hmm.
It's because I believe that if everyone did it like me, mm-hmm. we would all die.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not that it's a flaw on an individual character level.
Yeah.
It's that if I, and I'll go even further actually, if I keep doing it like me,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to die much earlier than I needed to.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. And it's not even like, I'll go remove the want, because mm-hmm. if I want, I'll rationalize I want to die sooner.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I say it all, like, I literally say it all the time. I'm like, nah, fuck it, I'll die early.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, and that's like a self, like it's a sadistic way of thinking,
mm-hmm.
but it's, to not be religious, but it's kind of like a devil running through you.
Sure. Yeah.
It's a devilish thought. And mm-hmm. that's why I believe spirituality,
mm-hmm.
kind of the church and all these things that come with that,
mm-hmm.
have been a way to curb, but more through the negative, mm-hmm. more through fear, because mm-hmm. that's generally what worked better,
mm-hmm.
that problem.
Yeah.
Spirituality has helped humankind get mm-hmm. through addiction.
Yeah.
Okay. How do we... And recognize that our sin, our original sin, is mm-hmm. that we are born to be addicts. Mm-hmm. We are addicts in mm-hmm. some way, shape, or form. We have to be.
Yeah.
Every animal has an addiction to food. Every mm-hmm. animal has their addiction to their patterns too.
Mm-hmm.
It is part of nature
yeah.
that we have these addictions.
Mm-hmm.
But it is also part of our nature, human nature, to recognize something and then potentially be able to change it.
Right.
And that's,
I think that's
very unique.
I think that's the gift and the curse. And if yeah. you really kind of like look at just the last decade, really, yeah. where you can kind of say this addiction has really spread and intensified.
Yeah.
You know, for lack of a better word, I call it limitless porn, right? All of yeah. a sudden you can do everything, right? Yeah. You can have everything and you can access everything.
And I can access all the information. So now...
And your potential has expanded exponentially
yeah.
beyond the point of your faculties to actually engage in that responsibly.
And therefore your impact yeah. has to.
And your impact has to.
Because if I can, with the click of a button,
yeah.
summon food to my yeah. door, mm-hmm. that is the ultimate... Like yeah. I kept thinking about how every time mm-hmm. I order on Uber Eats,
mm-hmm.
Through that act, mm-hmm. I am creating the definition yeah. of God.
I don't think we have the spiritual maturity to reconcile a world of infinite potential with finite opportunity to yeah. express it.
Yeah.
I don't think we lack the maturity to hold that, right?
You don't to hold think that we lack the maturity?
I think we lack the maturity to hold infinite potential yeah. with finite opportunity to express and engage in it.
Yeah.
You know, and to me, that's where the neurosis comes from. It's like, as a creative, as a writer, as someone with a platform and someone building a platform, you know, it's like, I can do anything right now, creatively, right? Yeah. And the fact that I can't do everything all at once just totally trips me out. You know, that is where the addiction comes from, because I cannot satiate
it. Just a few minutes, by the way, Jordan. Yeah. Just letting you know.
Yeah, because I literally can't satisfy that addiction. There's no satisfying it in a limitless world. In a world of infinite potential, there is no way to reconcile it when you can only express a small, 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 small fraction of an ever-expanding pie. And that's troubling. It's hard to find peace within that relationship.
Yeah.
You know? And that's why, you know, the addictions of, you know, other people who are a little less attuned to their potential, you know, and I hate creating mess generalizations, you know, yeah. the 9-to-5 day jobber, for example.
No, but I mean, it's...
But they're less aware of that ever-expanding pie and their potential to do anything. They're kind of resigned or relegated to what they believe and feel their potential is, and it's locked in and it's fixed and it's more sane mm-hmm. in many ways. It's a lot more sane and comfortable, and therefore their addictions are kind of more of the obvious ones to numb that out and the dissatisfaction within that.
It's more normal.
Yeah.
It's more standardized.
It's more normal and standardized.
And it's because the the way that socialization has happened.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a difference between like humanization and then social, like the human condition essentially, and then socialization.
Yeah.
Socialization is that people meet in bars.
Yeah.
And therefore culture is we watch sports, we drink.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Men, male culture many times.
Mm-hmm.
There's many male cultures around. We go to strip clubs because that's our way of sticking it to women.
Right.
And to the her.
Yeah.
Of the global her, right? Like I say her meaning the feminine energy.
Of course,
not
it's a
just
weaponized
a male,
expression.
Male,
it's a weaponized expression of male rage.
Exactly.
You know, in many ways.
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
And a male, like, lack.
Exactly.
Some level of, like, we lack it, so we'll get it here.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and that's where...
So I think a lot of things...
The same with money.
A lot like of things become revealed when you pause for a second and see the intention of which a certain action springs, and it becomes really scary to see how kind of self-abusive or abusive we all still are on some level. And I don't want to say we all are, because once again, everyone's experiencing something different. Anyway, just kind of wrapping this thread up with addiction. I was with my friend in a coffee shop just a few weeks ago, and this was kind of his moment of, reconciliation, and coming clean and being honest and showing remorse and asking for forgiveness, for all the things he's done, right? And like, I was proud of him for doing that. At the same time, I was on no fucking pedestal to judge, right? No, I haven't had cocaine and gambling addictions, but I've been an addict of a different sort, different kind. I've caused harm, not through that drug use, but through my own addiction, which can be seen on one level as noble and worthy, but at the same time, no less destructive than some of the other forms of addiction, right? So he's apologizing to me, and I'm like, yes, I forgive you, but don't look at me as someone more holy, as someone who can even be in a position or on a higher ground to judge you for
some
this.
Level of judgment,
right?
Higher position of judgment.
Yeah.
Which many people use. Many people do create that thing. And here's one thing I want to leave us with in terms of this journey is, I think that as somebody who maybe feels some level of responsibility for your well-being in this experience, because I did invite you to it, and I definitely created all the conditions for which it could be a very easy yes.
Yeah. I think I made you my son's godfather too. So if we're both
in
gone,
fairness, yeah, in fairness,
should we name it there?
Did I sign a paper about that? Does that mean I have to become a de facto dad if somehow anything is wrong with you? Mm-hmm. Number one, you'll be fine.
Yeah.
And that's actually what I wanted to say, which is either way, everything we're experiencing, this is the trippy part.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it's true, maybe it's not. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But there's some level of truth to it. Is everything I'm going to experience and everything you're going to experience, everything about the experience of ayahuasca in and of itself is it's almost like a holographic reflection of your own internal wisdom and psyche.
Right. Yeah.
Everything we are attributing to the ceremony and the act of that thing, realistically, everything we're going to experience is already within you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I find that to be incredibly impactful and comforting, because it's very possible to experience like the feeling of death. I think it's actually kind of quite likely. And I also believe that very likely to feel a feeling of rebirth, because we'll have the multiple ceremonies are part of that experience.
Yeah.
And in that, all of those things do come from within your own psyche. All the wisdom, all the spiritual guidance.
Right.
Yeah, maybe there's some greater wisdom in God or thing, and I'm not saying yes or no. Okay. I'm just saying that even if there is that, and all the religious texts, God is within you.
Right.
And so in that way, the entire experience is super interesting in that. And I also feel really excited, and this is what I'll share on my end. I feel really excited that energetically those brothers that we spoke about, mm-hmm. Phil and Jeremy and Cody and Greg and mm-hmm. yourself and myself and Trinity and the people who are hosting us and stuff, mm-hmm. we're all going to be in the same room.
Yeah.
And I'm so excited because as much as what's in me, there's also all of us outside of you and outside mm-hmm. of me mm-hmm. that are there to witness, hold space, share,
yeah,
cry, puke, whatever, the entire experience too. And that feels really exciting and fun as well. Mm-hmm. You know, so I'm definitely no stranger to the depths of that internal deep dive, mm-hmm. going into the deep end of the pool when it comes to other psychedelics.
Right.
Nor are you, not that you're unexperienced mm-hmm. with it, but you're less experienced than mm-hmm. I am. But I know that actually that serves you further mm-hmm. in a weird way. I think it serves you further. Mm-hmm. So yeah, what, you know, if you have to say last thoughts or any, you know, prayer or send up any prayers or something into the ether as we, you know, as we're going to ground down literally at this time, mm-hmm. In about a week's time, we will almost be landing in Cusco. We will, mm-hmm. We will starting to be landing possibly in Peru in and of itself in Lima, mm-hmm. Around this time. Yeah. What would you say? Is there, you know, what, if you're watching this later, mm-hmm. what could you say to yourself as a journey in that experience? Or what could you say to somebody who's listening to this, who is not you, mm-hmm. but who is you? I know that's a subtle question, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thanks for offering that. I think my prayer is for myself and for, you know, all of us engaging in this and everyone listening is, you know, whatever the tool you use to create that experience, to just allow for that moment of insight to occur, you know, that pause to recognize, even for a brief second, those default settings and those, you know, slow hums that are really not serving you and your highest calling and your fullest expression within yourself and your family and your friends and your loved ones, to allow yourself that moment of remorse if it arises, and to more importantly offer yourself that moment of healing, however it presents itself. Because as I've noticed, a lot of people are experiencing that cracking open right now, and it doesn't have to be glamorous and it doesn't need to be a retreat in Peru. But yeah, just pray that we can all be strong enough to stand tall within those flames as we see them arise, and to gift ourselves that opportunity to transmute them into something higher and more beneficial. That's all, you know.
Beautiful.
Yeah. And to be humble enough to recognize that we might not even know what that looks like, you know, so yeah.
Well, if you believe, ladies and gentlemen, that Ryan's got a dose of wisdom in him, I know he does, and I've seen it on display many times over. You know, we're going to be going on to this retreat. We have the intention of coming back, and Ryan's brand, Quantum Kings, that he's co-creating with others, and including myself in some way, shape, or form. You know, there will be many, many deep mm-hmm. dives, many reflections, I'm sure, that will come from this. Mm-hmm. I know that I'm sure I'm going to document more on a video scale on my end, surely on your end to some degree too. Mm-hmm. But very much in the words and you know, Ryan's kind of, as a profession, somebody would call him a copywriter, but he's more importantly, I think he's an expression artist. Mm-hmm. He's really good with his words. So I think there's lots to learn from that experience, lots to learn from the different pieces. If you ever want to join, you want to go on one of these retreats, then check out El Camino Sagrada, mm-hmm. Which is the sacred path, or sacred pathway, I guess, mm-hmm. Or sacred journey. It's kind of more, you know, it's kind of like in between all of those. You know, that's definitely a place. So I'll leave that link somewhere in the comments or somewhere in the description. You know where to find it. Mm-hmm. And I'll also check out Quantum Kings. Hopefully that's up and running by the time we're, anybody who's seeing this. I don't know when I'm going to publish this, but we'll see.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right.
See you in Peru. I'll see you way before Peru. Yeah. We're going to sit next to each other
on the plane for 8 hours.
Many hours. Yeah. I'll see you like tomorrow or the next day. But anyway.
Pretty much.
All right. Yeah,
cool. Much love, guys.